We're going to look at a few action-packed hours. One day in the life of Jesus the Messiah, as recounted by Luke. We're about the middle of Jesus' three-year ministry. We're in the second year of his ministry, as most people believe. And we're going to read together the end of Luke chapter 8, starting from verse 40, and you will see the words appearing on the screen. I think it's important that we, from time to time, read the scriptures together, and we're going to do that now. Now, when Jesus returned, can we all read this? No, we can't, because we haven't got it there. Okay. It's frozen. Yep. It's better if we can read it together, but there we go. Great. Okay. Right, let's try again then. Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She found him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Touch me," Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touch me. I know that power has gone out from me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him, and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She's not dead, but asleep." They laughed at him. Sorry. They took her by the hand and said, "I tell you, get up. It is known. And it all knows. Just something to eat." Okay. I think we might have missed out a verse there, but we won't worry too much about that. We'll come back to it in a minute. Okay, we saw last week how Jesus had been over on the western side of Lake Galilee, and he'd healed he'd exorcised the evil spirits from the man who'd been possessed by evil spirits. Now Jesus comes back across the lake to the western side of the lake, and there's a large crowd there to welcome him. The second year of Jesus' ministry is sometimes called the year of popularity. This is the year when everybody wants to see Jesus. And it says here, they were all expecting him, including one man who had a particular need. We know his name. He was Jairus, and he was the ruler of the synagogue. Now, what comes to mind if you hear the word synagogue? This is something that we don't find in the Old Testament, but we do find a lot of mentions in the New Testament. This is because in the 400 years between the end of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament, the Jews had this new institution, that of a synagogue. There was still the temple in Jerusalem. That was where you went to offer sacrifices. But there was a much more local expression of where you could meet with God called a synagogue. This was where you prayed. This was where you had the scriptures read to you. And if you were lucky enough to be a boy, this was where you would be educated, or at least you would have received a basic education in learning how to read. This man Jairus was a ruler of the synagogue. He obviously had an important role in the religious life of the community. But also, if there was an educational establishment attached to the synagogue, as there probably was, he would have had an educational role too. But he had a need, a great need in his life. As it says here, he came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house. Because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. He had a great need. And he'd heard about Jesus. He knew that Jesus had come to his own. He was a Jew. He was a ruler of the synagogue. And he wanted Jesus to meet him at his point of need. His only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. And Mark chapter 5 records what Jairus said. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. But there was a problem. There were loads of people all around Jesus. As it says here, as Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And then in verse 43, the focus shifts. A woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. This woman, too, also had a great need. Mark, in his accounts of this in chapter 5, says that she had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors, and she spent all that she had. Instead of getting better, she got worse. Now, Dr. Luke, who wrote this gospel, wouldn't have written something like that. It doesn't exactly put the medical profession in a very good light. But Mark had no axes to grind. And here he is, making a statement about the woman's need. The medical profession couldn't help her. She had continual bleeding. She had what we would call, in medical language, a hemorrhage. What would the woman have felt, and what would she have known about her condition? Well, we don't know exactly, but being a Jewish woman, she would certainly have known what the Old Testament law, as recorded in the book of Leviticus, would have told her. It says in Leviticus 15:25, when a woman has a discharge of blood for many days at a time, other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Now, we may find this rather strange, but if you were unclean, you weren't allowed into the synagogue to worship. But it was worse than that for the woman. Leviticus 15 verse 19 says, when a woman has her regular flow of blood, the impurity of her monthly period will last 7 days. And anyone who touches her will be unclean till evening. It wasn't that she was unclean, that was bad enough, but anyone that touched her was also unclean. If she touched someone, that person, it says, would be unclean until evening. But such was the woman's need. 12 years is a long time to have this condition. And remember that she'd been cut off from fellowship with God's people. She'd been excluded from any contact with the synagogue, any contact probably of hearing God's word for herself. And she was at that point of need where really these things were important as though they were, her need was the priority. And it says in verse 44 of Luke chapter 8, when she came up behind him, she touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Mark, in his account, says she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. So something instant happened. Something dramatic happened. She knew. Quite how she knew, we don't know, but she knew God's touch. And she was instantly healed. But what did this lady know? Why had she done this? Well, really, we don't know exactly what she knew, but Jesus does commend her for her faith. And I think this is the key to understanding what she was doing. What did she know about Jesus? Well, Mark's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 56, has this statement. Wherever he went, into the villages, towns, and countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched him were healed. So this probably wasn't the first time that this had happened. These things had been going on in other parts of the region. The woman had known about this. This was her chance, she thought, to come. Even touch the hem of Jesus' garment and she would be healed. She certainly would have known about Jewish clothes. She would have known what the significance was of certain parts of clothing. This may be lost to us, but if we read Numbers 15:37, we get a clue, perhaps, of what was going through her mind. This is one of the laws that the Lord had given to Moses, as it says in verse 37. Speak to the Israelites and say to them, throughout the generations to come, you are to make tassels on the corners of your garments, with a blue cord on each tassel. You shall have these tassels to look at, and so that you will remember all the commands of the Lord, that you may obey them. So you can see here a picture of what these tassels may have looked like. There were tassels on the edge of the garment, especially on the corner. The Hebrew word there is one that I've highlighted because we need to look at it in another two cases as well. It's the word kanap. It just means, in this case, corner. And she would have known something of what the Old Testament taught about Jewish clothes. And it was part of the clothing to have these tassels on the corners of their garments. But she might have known also something that the prophet Zechariah said about tassels. This is what the Lord Almighty says. In those days, 10 men from all languages and nations will take firm hold of one Jew by the edge of his robe. And this is the Hebrew word kanaf that we've just seen, the corner, the edge. And say, let us go with you because we have heard that God is with you. Now, this, of course, is a particular prophecy. It may relate to an event yet future. But even so, the lady herself, if she had known this, would have known that there was something significant about the tassels that hung from the garment of a Jew. And that people would one day come to a Jew and ask to touch the garment and know God's power and know that God was with him. And we have this same word in the next book of the Old Testament, the prophet Malachi, Malachi 4, verse 2. Again, this is a prophecy referring to events that may still be future. But it says here, but you who revere my name, the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in his wings. And the word again for wings is kanaf. This word for corner, this word for tassel. The Son of Righteousness, well, that is a clear reference to the Messiah who was standing in front of her. Now, whether she knew all this, we just don't know. But I like to think that God had been working something of this in her life. And don't forget, it's what she's commended for is her faith. Who touched me? Jesus asked. Interesting question, isn't it? Who touched me? Jesus didn't say, who touched my cloak, who touched my tassels? He said, who touched me? Well, really, the woman hadn't touched Jesus. She just touched the edge of his cloak. But Jesus knew something had happened. When they all denied it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing around you. Well, you can't really complain about someone touching you, Jesus. There's a whole crowd of people around you. But Jesus said, someone did touch me. Because I know that power has gone out of me. Now, the Greek word here is dunamis, which we know what that means, don't we? It's dynamite. It's a real explosion of power. And Jesus knew that something had happened. Power had gone out of him as the woman came forward and touched the edge of his cloak. Now, how did this impact the woman? Well, verse 47 tells us, then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, she probably just wanted to sneak in and touch and run back into the crowd and hope that that would be the end of it all. But it didn't work. She came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, now you can imagine her embarrassment, can't you? Her condition was bad enough. The 12 years that she'd had excluded from fellowship with God's people was bad enough, but now to be exposed in front of all these people and have to give an account for herself, well, it was scary. And it says here, she told why she had touched him. Now, it would have been nice to have heard her exact words, but Luke doesn't record those. We can only guess, but I think the train of thought on those verses that I've given you recently perhaps give us an idea of what was going through her mind. But she said, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." And it's very important that we pause here and we remember that this is what Jesus commends her for. It's her faith. And it's her faith that has healed her, and she can go in peace. It wasn't superstition on her part. It wasn't just that she thought, well, I can touch the holy man, or I can touch the garment that a holy man is wearing. What Jesus commends her for is her faith. And very clearly here, it's faith in a person. It's faith in Jesus himself. And I think this really is perhaps the key thing that I want to draw out of this passage, is that so often we can have faith in faith itself, or we can have faith in prayer. But what we need is faith in Jesus, faith in God. Faith really, I know there are lots of definitions of it in the Bible, but faith here is trust, it's confidence. It's knowing that here before you is the answer to your need, to your problems, and we just have to reach out as the woman did and touch him. But meanwhile, while all this was going on, what was Jairus thinking? Well, I'm sure he was getting very hot under the collar or under the tassels if he was wearing them. He'd been kept waiting. It says so. Jairus kept waiting. Why don't you just speak a word? Like what had happened with the centurion servant, he might have thought. We've read that in Luke 7. All you need to do, Jesus, is say the word and my daughter will be healed. Why are you bothering with this woman who's taking up your time? And then, as it says in verse 49, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed." So, Jesus goes to the house of Jairus. And Matthew 9 records that when Jesus entered the ruler's house and saw the flute players and a noisy crowd, he said, "Go away." It suggests that there was a bit of a time interval between when the daughter had died and when Jesus arrived on the scene. A crowd had gathered and they were wailing. This was the beginning of the funeral, perhaps the funeral preparations anyway. And there were loads of people milling around, lots of noise, wailing, a noisy crowd. And Jesus' words are very instructive, aren't they? "Go away," he says. He did not let anyone go with him into the house except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Now, we don't know why exactly he selected these people. We certainly know that Peter, James and John were his leading apostles, people that he was singling out for future ministry. And of course, he wanted the child's mother and father to be there. And verse 52 says, "Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her." "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She's not dead, but asleep." Why does Jesus say this? Surely he knew that the daughter had died. Well, really, Jesus is the only person who can say this. Revelation 1 says that Jesus holds the keys of death. And Paul, in his writing to the church in Thessalonica, twice says that those who have fallen asleep are like those who've died. There's a connection between death and falling asleep. He says later on, whether we are awake or asleep. And for the believer, death is really just like sleep. It's only of limited duration. And one day, of course, we will receive our new bodies. And in the meantime, whatever happens, death for a believer is just like sleep. And Jesus could say that, perhaps no one else could, but they laughed at him. They knew that the girl was dead. But what did Jesus do? Verse 54, he took her by the hand. Now, we might miss the significance of that in a Jewish context, but of course, to touch a dead body was to make yourself unclean. But Jesus took her by the hand. He made himself unclean at that point. It didn't particularly bother him, but that was the legal position. And he said, "My child, get up." And Mark records the words that Jesus said to the girl in Aramaic, the language that Jesus and the people of that area would have used at the time. "Talitha kumi," he says, "little girl, get up." And 55 of Luke 8 says, "her spirit returned." Now, we're not going into all the questions that phrase throws up. You know, where had her spirit gone in the intervening time? And it probably wasn't more than an hour or so. That's not what's in focus here. It says simply, at once, she stood up. It was an instant coming back to life. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Jesus had a concern for the girl, and this is what he wants to pass on to her parents. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. Why? This is very different from what happened last week. Remember when the man had had the demons taken out of him and the demons had gone into the pigs, he told him specifically to tell what had happened. When the widow of Nain's son had been raised from the dead, it says, news about Jesus spread throughout the land of the Jews and the surrounding country. But in this case, he doesn't want news to be noised abroad. Why is this? Well, again, we don't really know, but I think probably his main concern is for this 12-year-old daughter. He doesn't want people coming in and interviewing her. He just wants her to go and melt into the background again, just to live a normal life. He wanted, really, I think, to give her the chance to have a private life and for her privacy to be respected. There may be other reasons for that as well. We don't know. But we clearly see two ladies, and we don't know their names, who were transformed by their encounter with Jesus and his power. We see in this passage, which probably only took place in the period of a few hours, that Jesus has power over disease and power over death. Jesus himself has conquered death. This is what the rest of the Gospels clearly teach. We don't have it specifically spelled out here, but whatever our needs are, he asks us to come, and he asks us to come in the way that the woman came and the way that Jairus came. How did they come? Well, the two things that are said are basically the same thing. He says to the woman with the bleeding, "Your faith has healed you." And the Greek word there is the word for saved as well. Your faith has saved you. It's rescued you from this situation. And he says to Jairus about his daughter, "Just believe and she will be healed." Again, the word there is saved. So, whatever our needs are, our response should be that of the woman and of Jairus in relation to his daughter. We need to exercise faith. We need to believe. Now, faith is not just wishes, not just hopes. It's confidence. And ultimately, as I think we see from this passage, perhaps more clearly than many places in the New Testament, confidence and trust in a person. In this case, in Jesus, our Saviour and our healer. Turn it off.